do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Today's episode, all the way from Australia, we have Kyron and Juan. They are the hosts of the Mere Mortals podcast. And today they join me to talk and discuss our curiosities with consciousness and death. Two very important and heavy topics that I feel like as beings in this existence, we're going to be consistently thinking about as we just, you know, ride along in this thing we call life. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. We also touched on a little bit of the concept of anti-fragility and the obvious and inevitable integration with artificial intelligence. But nonetheless, I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. I hope you guys check out their show. I don't doubt that if you go and you check out one of their episodes, you're going to keep coming back for more over and over and over again. So check it out. Check them out. Tune in. Subscribe. Do all the cool stuff, you know? And today's music is brought to you by I Hate You Alex with his song 100 Rounds. You can find his music on Spotify and SoundCloud. And as usual, make sure you support local musicians. Check out their Instagrams. Give them a follow. Follow their music. And before you know it, you're going to have a whole new playlist of a bunch of local artists. So what are you waiting for? Get it done. Without much further ado, I hope you guys enjoy.
On the scene, they'd rather shoot you on the street. They wanna tell you raise your hands, and if I tell them that I am, I still get choked till I can't breathe. Yeah. You see them calling on the scene. They'd rather shoot you on the street. Yeah, every time you take a stand, they wanna kill you where you stand, and they get mad you take a knee. Hey, fuck the peace where my peace at. Hey, fuck a speech with a beat set. Gotta call Vince so I can talk my shit again. Cause even if I don't hit again, I'm still gonna be the man on the road like a Michelin. It's all good. Fuck 12 and I hope you hear it in all hoods. I hope you never get a day off. In fact, I hope you get laid off. Tryna sweep shit under the rug like you paid off. I hope your daughter bumped this shit so you could listen to it. You'd rather shoot cause you can't fight. Yeah, that's how bitches do it.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning back in. Today we have some pretty special guests. They're coming here from a few thousand miles away. I like that we were able to do this through Zoom. There's no travel bans, no like COVID measures that we have to take. You know, we're face to face and we're doing this. So from Australia, we have Mere Mortals, we have Kyron, and we have Juan. What's up, guys?
What's going on? Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you very much for the little introduction. You're right, man. It's we might be a few thousand miles away from each other, but it's interesting how easy it is now to communicate from across the distances with Zoom or whatever else. And it's been good.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like the whole time thing is was very interesting for me to try to set this up for you guys. You guys are, I guess it's Friday for you guys, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we live in the future.
You live in the future.
Unfortunately, yeah, we can't predict that much, but we try.
Which is funny because when I was a kid, you know, like the whole like the Y2K 2012, like, oh, it's going to end when it turns, blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, we're like, wait a second, Australia's already in the future. Like, we're good. Yeah,
they made it.
They're actually still living. Yeah, no, I had a similar feeling. I remember traveling once over my birthday. And so I recall sort of leaving one place and it was still my birthday and arriving somewhere else and it was still my birthday. So I was like, oh, my birthday's been extended. So excellent. Yeah,
you keep celebrating.
Definitely play with your mind. But it's good. It's good to be able to communicate with people, right? Being so much in different areas and different time zones. Like you're saying, for yourself, I think we're probably around, 12 hours, 14 hours difference?
Yeah, because I mean, at least from where this is happening, it's 8 p.m. over here on Thursday.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So even more. It's 15 hours.
It's cool. Thank you guys again. I'm glad we were able to make this happen. But for those people who haven't heard of you guys here in LA, like, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your show and like your background and, you know, individually where you guys come from.
Easy. So, look, I'll hit us up. So Mere Mortals, right? We got a little tagline. So we strive for excellence pretty much through life lessons. From us, we already communicated with each other. So Kyron over here, he traveled after sort of taking away a little bit of time from his work. He went traveling for a little while and let him explain sort of that background. But we communicated with each other almost in a podcast form, like we're doing yourself, Eddie. We had a bit of a chat with each other, probably about half an hour every week while he was traveling, just kind of keep in touch. Nice. When he came back to Australia, we decided, look, it's kind of like we're already doing something like this. We're already kind of conversing in particular with topics, learnings, goals, things that we're improving on. We thought, look, let's encapsulate that into an actual podcast. The idea kind of came out of Mere Mortals because we are just two mere mortals that, you know, we've become good at, you know, certain things, other things we're still improving. But we thought, look, from that, let's use it as a platform that we ourselves can learn from, share sort of benefits, share learnings that we find through books, mediums, podcasts, talking to other people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it just sort of began from there. So yeah. I don't know, Karen, give me the background as to how you came about.
Just to add on to that. So yeah, we're both from where we actually know each other. We're high school friends. So we know each other for 15 plus more than that years now. And yeah, so we went to high school, both went to uni together, both did engineering, sort of went our separate ways for a couple of years there. And I had I wouldn't say quarter life crisis, but I realized like, you know what? I'm really not enjoying what I'm doing here.
No. Or the quarter life crisis.
Quarter life crisis, yeah.
And so, yeah, I decided to travel. So I went through all through South America, through Mexico, Guatemala. And like what I mentioned, I think the reason for the podcast was sort of, we were doing it anyway. So if I look back, I can see like a bunch of the notes that I used to take down almost in like preparation for talking with Juan and another friend of ours. And they're almost like identical to another thing we do in our show, which is like the Mere Mortal Moment, which is sort of like a little reflection on the week. What's something like I personally did that was either dumb or just like a learning. Mm-hmm. And so it was funny, like starting the podcast has actually been the easiest thing because all we really had to do was buy the camera and the mics. Mm. And then we're already doing it.
Yeah. Cause you guys were already talking, having these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. Look, and a little bit my background as well. So of course did engineering, did that for around 8 or 9 months until I decided, you know, yeah, this isn't for me. Essentially moved away into the IT digital world back then. And sort of being consulting and working in digital transformations and that for quite a long time. So yeah, my full day-to-day sort of work is a little bit of a consultant slash contractor. So this sort of enables me to be like my sort of artistic side of things and be able to express things that I don't get to, you know, in any other sort of platform and ways. So it's always good fun. But I guess sort of where Mere Mortals came from and I guess, yeah, sort of the reasons behind where we sort of intertwine knowing each other from a long time back and bring into what it is now.
Which by the way, Mere Mortals, badass name. That's a cool name. You know what?
I'm so glad you say that because all of our very first planning session.
Yeah.
I came totally unprepared. Mm-hmm. And so Juan just had a list and it was all like the Juan and Kyron show, Juan, JG and KD and all this other stuff. And I was like, nah, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then he just had Mere Mortals right at the end.
Yeah. It was like one of the very last ones that I sort of thought about and went, oh yeah. What about this? What about Mere Mortals? And sort of the reason behind what that meant and everything. And, you know, was one of the intents that we went behind the name and the podcast was, you know, we already listened to a few podcasts, Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, a couple of others. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things is, they interview really high level people, which is awesome, right? Amazing. Mm. But one of the key things is when you pull learnings from them, it's great, but sometimes a little bit hard to be actionable learnings, i.e., you know, this is what like Elon Musk is doing and that's phenomenal, but he's Elon Musk and he's got $80 billion worth of things and he's got all these other items that he's got around him. And I kind of thought, well, for a mere mortal, and I'm talking about like, what about the fifth person coming up in this particular industry or someone who's still currently hungry, chasing for something, they're going to be potentially doing things or be more actively engaging in whatever event they're doing, that you might be able to find learnings that you can really relate to. That's why I was like, okay, Mere Mortals is like that other mere mortal, that other human that's still sort of progressing, climbing up the ladder, learning things that you can really relate to one-to-one. So a little bit of background, I guess, where that name sort of came from. So now it's good to hear that there's some people out there liking the name. Thanks for that, Eddie.
Yeah, I mean, the name sells it. You know, I sometimes you see other, not dissing anything or anybody, but sometimes you see a name, you're like, okay, you know, but then you see compared to a different name, you compare, you're like, oh, damn, Mere Mortals? Let's do it. Let's check it out.
Well, one of the things I do, Eddie, is I'm pretty like on Instagram. That's, I suppose, our main platform where we connect with people. And I spend a lot of time like going through other podcasts, sort of connecting with them, adding them, like maybe leaving a comment out now and then. And you go through these massive chunks where you'll realize like there's 100 podcasts all called Quarantine Time. There's 100 all like in my 20s. There's another 100 all about like black queens and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like, it's pretty funny, like going through all of them, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know what? I think we actually did okay with the name.
A little bit unique. Yeah, yeah, no, I'll do like it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the thing is to create some, or at least name something that can be like open-ended in a sense, you know, like it doesn't just fall into one specific area. But again, overall, a cool name. So, I mean, I came across your guys' page maybe like two, three months ago. Mm-hmm. And I saw the content. I'm very visual, so I like when a page has like content that just really like catches your eyes. So I was like, damn. And then I started hearing the conversations, you know, very intellectual conversations, if I have to say anything about them. Like, you're hearing them and you're like, damn, like, it gives you like, they're like a minute sometimes, like the little clips, but you get enough information that you make yourself you know, interested enough to check this show out. So when I heard you guys, I was like, damn, this is awesome, you know, because again, you guys are one of the first podcasts that I've interviewed from so far away. So I think it's very interesting that I'm having somebody here that has similar opinions or perspectives in a way, or want to challenge or question certain thought processes. So, you know, it's interesting that you guys are on here, and, you know, this is why we're doing this. So now my question for you guys is, at what point you guys are, I'm assuming, because you guys said quarter life, you guys are like in your mid, late 20s, right?
28.
All right, cool. I just happened to turn 30, so I'm still holding on to those late 29, like, months.
Nice,
you know?
Deals.
However, like, for me, I didn't get, I guess, curious or start asking questions till like, maybe till like 24 or so, right? And I feel like by that time, I should have already been asking all these questions. So, like, for you guys, when did you find the curiosity to kind of like start delving into these topics?
I think we actually did a topic talking about turning 25. It's one of our very first ones. I think it's like the fifth episode. And I'd say it was probably around that same time for me. It seemed to me that almost like I excelled at school. Like, I did really well at school. That whole structure suited me perfectly, just tests and being able to grade and whatnot. But I think one of the things it did for me was it like beat out the curiosity and desire to learning. We were both talking recently how we used to read books, so many books as teenagers, like the Harry Potter books, all these different sort of spy books and whatnot. And then we both had a period where we didn't read anything for like 5 years during university. Mm-hmm. So I think that sort of, I guess, like the questioning of in like a fun sense as well, because it's, you can have like philosophical questioning, and then you can have sort of silly stuff, and it doesn't have to be separate as well. You can sort of shift from one end to the other.
So
for me, it was probably around 25.
Look, similarly, I think at 25, and I think 25 for me, and maybe just a little bit beforehand, that there I sort of progressed from, you know, when you think about university, college, I'd gone into the workforce, and I had this mindset, right, where it was like, okay, well, I finished my university college degree, now I'm doing work, this is what I'm supposed to be doing with life, right? And you're kind of almost in this sort of monotonous, everything's going the same sort of path. You're doing the right things. So the next stage is like, go and get yourself, you know, set up a family, buy a house, have a nice life. That's the sort of typical thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, sort of at that time as well, I went through probably a little bit before that, a couple of years before that, sort of a shift with a partner that I had for a long time, was with a new partner. So there's a couple of changes happening at that sort of point. And I also started shifting away a little bit from that mindset I think many people get into where, yeah, you know, it's all about is it money, is it fame, what are you chasing? And starting to shift towards more the meaning. So I think thinking rather than, you know, just a status or like an ideal of what you wanting to be based on what other people, you know, you see around you, more trying to understand just individually what is the meaning of your life. So, you know, Freud's old adage is, you know, chasing sort of passion or chasing that, you know, being in a great state. But Viktor Frankl's that I'm only sort of currently reading through, you know, actually chasing meaning. I think I went through this period where I understood like, okay, meaning to me is actually things like fitness, you know, always being able to learn whether on the job or doing something artistic like A Mere Mortals or something similar. And that's probably what triggered me to start changing. Okay, well, I'm no longer doing jobs purely for the fact for income, you know, salary, availability. It's more like, you know, am I being engaged enough? Am I doing things that I think are valuable to the world and to myself? So, and sometimes it's the impetus of something happening. So for me, there was a couple of events happening from changes within relationship and changes with job. But, you know, I think we'll all sort of come to those points somewhere across life. And I reckon we'll probably find them again when we hit 30 yeah. and 35. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things we try to do with Mere Mortals, right, is we're probably doing it almost on a weekly basis. So with some of the musings that we do and reflecting back or reflecting back monthly on some of our monthly goals, we try and go like, okay, I totally failed at this. You know, what was the reason behind that? Is it, are we progressing in the right way? Am I doing the right things? Or coming across just completely new learning? Did you go, wow, like, you know, what I thought of the world and what it was has completely shifted, and let's actually take some action and go forth into a new path. So, yeah.
So just turning 30, Eddie, you got some heavy shit coming your way.
Hey, man, I know the back pains are starting to come in, like the back aches. Nah, I mean, I think for the most part, I mean, I'm not like super like in the, well, obviously right now you can't go to the gym, at least here in the States, in the US, you know? But yep. for the most part, you know, a lot of people have more been taking more like proactive, going to the park, working out. And I'm one of those, you know, so I'm trying to keep my weight steady. I don't want that COVID weight on me up for now, you know, but for the most part, being 30, it was hard, man. It was definitely a lot of self-reflecting, a lot more than it was like 3-4 years ago. Just because, you know, like, again, you start setting these goals and you start, or not setting these goals, but you start falling into this mindset that you have to meet certain standards that society has placed. That you, if you don't meet by a certain age group, you're a failure in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you start reflecting like, okay, like what really, like Juan's mentioned here is like, you start reflecting on exactly what you value in yourself first in this, you know, type of way to see where you want to go. And it was hard, man. And I'm still kind of freaking out every now and then. I'm like, oh, like I'm not, oh shit. I cuss here. I curse here, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, do so, mate.
You haven't spent enough time around Australian language to
there's a lot of cussing. But look, no, Eddie, like what you're mentioning, right? It's we're mentioning some of this point that we're kind of calling it that we've got this glorified view of, you know, some of the top level people, right? Some individuals like in your Elon, your Jeff, maybe in sporting like a Usain Bolt, all these things, people have achieved, you know, crazy things at certain ages. And you can, if you compare yourself to those individuals, right now, they've, for whatever reason, either genetically or they've spent a lot of effort into one area to become great at that thing. It is very unfair for an individual, right, as a mere mortal, to just compare yourself to that level if you either haven't been spending as much effort to try to get to that and have been focusing on other things and just coming into the acceptance that, you know, sure, you're turning 25, 30, 35, 40, depending on, you know, who's listening at the moment, you know, whatever you may be turning, you've spent your effort or, you know, the amount of time that you have on certain things, and you kind of have to be comfortable with, it's actually okay that you're not absolutely the top at a particular thing, because, you know, to be truthful, you might not be focusing as much as you need to. I think Tom Brady, NFL side of things, he sort of mentioned that, you know, to beat him in the NFL, you know, he was giving up everything to be the best in the NFL that he could be. Now, if you're not putting in absolutely everything and giving everything away, then you're probably not going to be able to be that good, right? Yeah, so you got to come into the acceptance of like, what is the amount of effort that you're giving? And are you making yourself feel bad or down when you know that you're either not trying to be or not pushing to be that level?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people, they're not willing to push themselves to that level, you know, or they justify the reasons why. I mean, and it's understandable, but you at the same time, you got to understand you're not going to meet that level, like you said, if you're not exerting that extra mile, you know, you're not pushing yourself those extra rounds, so on and so forth. But question for you guys, you know, because, you know, I'm here in the States, you guys in Australia, random question that just came up into my head. Like, what is your guys' perspective, opinion on what's going on over here? Because I'm sure how you guys receive the media is completely different to what we're probably being fed. And I'm just curious to see what you guys think of all this, or how do you
can probably answer a bit easier, because I really don't consume that much media. I really try and avoid it as much as I can. So my snippet, I get like snippets here and there from different places. I think like it's hard to tell because you do get these different sources. So I suppose like our main media outlets will probably like reflect, I guess, yours in a similar sense. Like you'll have like maybe a more right-leaning one, maybe a lot more left-leaning one, but obviously just not to the same scale that you guys have. So it's hard. Like I'll get like, you know, something from the Joe Rogan podcast where he's talking about how it's crazy, like all the restrictions are going on. And then there's, you know, combine that with the what is it, every 4 years, the big elections coming up and whatnot. So it sort of seems like there's crazy stuff going on, but also, you know, it's not like the world is totally ending as well, but it does seem like there maybe there is some big changes just with the rise of like China and stuff in general, like long-term sort of stuff going on.
Yeah. Look, for me, I'm completely polar opposite when it comes here to the current. I absorb so much information on a daily basis that I'm sort of like the one that try to like grab these snippets and like throw it to Karen. So it's like, oh, all this stuff's happening. So, you know, primarily when I look from an American perspective, I don't know, Ray Dalio, if you're aware, Ray Dalio of Bridgewater. So Ray over in the States, he sort of has been publishing all this information, specifically economically wise, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about sort of the rise and fall of a lot of empires all the way back to like 2000 years ago. And one of the key things I've been sort of following through is sort of the monetary policy and a little bit of this of figures that's been showing sort of, you know, in, at the States, how some of those figures are starting to come down. And at the same time, some of the Chinese ones are starting to come up in terms of, you know, what it means to be in the term empires. So, yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that perspective where it's starting to see, at least from a media news perspective, like there's a lot of, you know, massive things breaking out, all this coronavirus, you know, across the States. It seems like, you know, everything's chaotic, everything's being locked down. We kind of get a bit of the picture of like, wow, US hasn't got the stuff together. Seems like it's all over the place. But I also personally know a lot of people who live in New York, Texas, LA, San Francisco, where it's not really the case. Like on the ground, it kind of seems like, yeah, there's pockets where there's a lot of things going off wrong, and like particular hospitals where something might be going wrong. But those are only the very specific ones that are getting highlighted in the media.
Right.
US is a huge country, right? 300 plus million people, a lot of different places, a lot of different states. It's not, you can't look at the macro, you can't look at that one particular thing happening and go, well, that's the macro of it. That's only the micro of something happening specifically in that event. So I think Australians get a bit of a really skewed view of what's currently happening in the States if we just looked at our media. And I think it's on the ground, it's probably not as bad as it probably seems to be. And I was going to ask you, Eddie, what to you, has it felt like it has been really that bad? Like, do you consume content at the moment from a media perspective that's saying, you know, the States is overwhelmed with COVID, or is there more focus right now on just the election?
Well, I mean, for sure, you know, being here in LA, there's a, I wouldn't say there's, it doesn't look, when you're walking out, you're going in the streets, you see people kind of doing their daily thing just with masks and stuff. So it doesn't really look like there's a lot happening. There's definitely a lot of like less traffic because LA's known for horrible traffic. And now
LA has the worst traffic, the worst. Now I've, so I'm originally Colombian. Uh-huh. So, and I'm Colombia and Bogota specifically used to have the worst traffic. There was, right?
I can attest to this.
And Karen can attest because he's been there. But I drove in LA in 2011, I think, right? I was there. I was like, oh, I'm going to rent a car. I'm going to drive up to San Francisco and all the way through to Las Vegas. And I remember taking like 3 hours to be able to get from the airport with the car rental just to like the hotel I was staying. So, yep. If you're telling me there's less cars on the road...
Yeah, now you can get anywhere. That's
definitely a benefit. Because
yeah, you can get to the mountains, to the beach, like in 20, 30 minutes now.
Dang, so, yeah.
You know, it's awesome. It feels like a California road, you know? But, well, you know, with that being said, it feels weird because, I mean, you know, like right now there's a lot of like the whole police brutality going on. Just like a few months ago, there was like SWAT teams and like National Guard on the streets, which is really rare to see here, you know? And you see it and you're like, oh, dang, like, things are starting, it looks like things are escalating, you know?
Yeah.
But again, they're isolated events in a sense. So you don't really have a bigger picture of what's going on in all different parts of the country. But at least to see that here, it was just very new. And I wouldn't say worrying, but it was just something that you're starting to question, like, wait a second, like what's really going on here, you know?
But, yeah, potentially like a little warning sign as far as like, okay, this is maybe something I should keep more of an eye on in the future.
Yeah, because like, again, like we're not here. We're not used to the fact that they'll just be like, oh, there's a curfew at 9 p.m. It's like, what? Like, who's going to enforce that, first of all? Like, there's not enough, you know, like, I guess for now, military soldiers or police to come in and just enforce everybody to stay in. But when they announced it as like as some emergency through your cell phone, like a Amber Alert type of thing, you're like, that's weird. Like, you know, and
yeah, some people, a little bit different.
yeah, it's very, it definitely very different. Yeah. And you're like people are just kind of abiding to it. They start easily like, oh, you can't go outside. You have to stay indoors. It's like, what? Like, I'm not even doing anything criminal. I'm just walking around to the store or something, you know?
Yeah. But, well, and I think generally you're always going to have like pretty polarized views. You're going to have one side or the other. Mm-hmm. What I've been noticing a lot more coming from everything I consume is the views on either side are starting to become much more extreme. So there's some individuals that I listen to where they're just straight out saying like, we need to stop these restrictions right now. So this is coming from the US, like people like Jordan Belfort and a couple of others. They're like, we need to end these restrictions right now. Like, we're harming the economy a lot more. Sure, it's probably harming the economy to some level, right? But then there's completely other areas where individuals are like, no, this is really serious. We really need to, buckle down. We need to make sure that this goes away, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm starting to see like those views are becoming even more extreme, which is probably where things are going to get a little bit nasty. Like when it gets to that really, really extreme and you can have these two views that are so far apart, all of a sudden you're not even like in any common ground. I mean, you can have that really big tension where bad things can actually happen. So, I mean, that's probably where I'm starting to see that going towards, which is not a great sign. So hopefully, hopefully things will start coming down in the future, definitely for everyone's sake.
Yeah, let's hope so. Mm. Going back to our original conversation here, I wanted to bring up the idea of consciousness. I know like some of the episodes I've heard from you guys, they get very introspective about, you guys yourselves and about like whatever either experience or guess that you're kind of talking about. You know, I think there's a lot of self-reflection and seeing where we each can improve and, taking our failures into consideration to make better decisions, I guess. Where does that come like from your in your opinion, what is the idea of consciousness? Only because I'm curious to hear what you guys think about it.
You want to say that?
Well, I'll say at the onset that probably our views we listen to, or Kyron used to as well, to Sam Harris. And if you haven't listened to Sam Harris's podcast or read any of his books, I would point people like that is probably one of the best places that I've seen that sort of like that fills out my belief in terms of consciousness and have quite in-depth information about that. When it comes to consciousness for me though, and I'll reflect it back to a story where we were in Japan, right? It was myself, Kyron, and another mate of mine. And we were walking down this super quiet street for like an hour. And there was just like no noises, no cars. And we started talking about these particular topics. And I think that's probably the first time, this was 2 years ago, where I really started to think about like, okay, what is these much more, esoteric, this out there words and meanings, what do they actually mean to me? Now, consciousness to me, right? I would only split between, so as simple as that be it, it'd be for me, there's conscious and there's subconscious. From the point of consciousness to me is the ability for you to make an active decision against something or building up something to the point that you're actively making a choice. So when you're subconsciously going about your day, like, a lot of the time when you're driving, you've driven for many years, when you're driving from point A to point B, you're not really conscious at that point of what you're doing. They're sort of like your body is just driving it. You're going to be thinking about something completely different. I kind of think to be conscious of something, you need to be actively participating in it. So then when I look at actual consciousness, I almost just refer to it myself as, okay, I've got to be actively engaged in some manner, in some way in my senses to say, yeah, this is to me, I'm consciously doing something or actively doing something.
Yeah. So I've sort of gone down a more like personal route trying to explain it. So like what I mentioned, there's this guy, Sam Harris, who's a neuroscientist. He does a lot of stuff with the brain. So when he's examining it, in a very scientific method, as in like there's experiments you can do where you have someone in a machine and you tell them, okay, you need to press a button at a certain time. And they can basically like almost predict, I think it's a very short time period, but couple of hundreds of milliseconds beforehand when you're actually going to click it. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like there's these different experiments and you can go down this whole route of trying to examine it from like a data perspective or a individual perspective or whatever. For me, I've definitely taken more like my own investigation. So that's like altering it. So, plenty of ways of doing that. Lucid dreaming you know, taking psychedelic drugs, meditation, getting into like exercising in flow states, deprivation of food or water or whatever, you can really change your own perspective and how you're looking at it. So that's how I've personally done it, like my own little investigation. So you'll realize different things are possible. Lucid dreaming's a real interesting one because it's subconscious, but then you can like awaken a consciousness in it. It's a very like 1-0 thing. So I've got a story of how I was, went to sleep. I was doing these things, and you can basically do these reality tests to try and force yourself to wake up in a dream, right? Yes. So you attain consciousness. And yeah, there's been one time in particular where I did it, and it was like just that moment. It's almost like, imagine if you were sleeping and then waking up, but you could feel that bit right before sleeping, like those 10 seconds before.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. It was sort of like I was going through my dream, doing my normal thing, and then like looked into a mirror and realized like, holy shit, I'm actually dreaming now.
Yeah.
So, you know, what to take from that? I have no freaking clue.
Yeah. And I mean, the only thing I was going to link it, right? So I know we're talking a little bit. So consciousness and death, right? So you can even look at it from, you know, birth through to death. So, you know, a lot of people will go in and think and have a discussion about, well, what happened pre-birth and what happens, you know, post-death? Like, does your consciousness just completely end at those two barriers and points? And we've talked a little bit about this with, we're finding a lot of things, right? It's going to be contextual to like a space, a time, a limit that you set. And I think for me, like when you can talk about like consciousness or, you know, do you think about anything else post-death? I think it's almost the word or the meaning can't go beyond that context. Like for you as a human, for you and what you experience, and again, what you're active towards, what you can have sensory interaction with, it can be from the very beginning, from when you're actually, you know, born through your death. But outside of those boundaries, that meaning of consciousness doesn't really exist. And another example I kind of bring that to is, you know, us as humans, we're only conscious or active of the world around us to as much as our senses allow it. So you imagine one of those lobsters that can see ultraviolet light and infrared light, because that's just how they've, you know, scientifically, they're able to do that from the way that they're structured. Now, we can't do that, but it's not to say that their version or reality of the world is incorrect.
Exactly.
It's just their version of the world, right? So like reality is only true to the point of you as a human can see on the context of your own breadth of the world that you see it. There was this thing I was actually reading about, not fully for sure, but statistically, it was actually proven that, you know, we would see what we see of the world is probably 100% incorrect. If you were trying to say, if you try to get broadly how everything is seen by different, you know, beings, because, you know, a lobster might see something a different way. If you could see, you know, all the different types of lights emanating, all the different wavelengths, all the different particles, the world probably looks completely different to what we perceive it to be, but it's only our perception of it and what makes the form of our consciousness reality. So I think and that's why I sort of sometimes talk about when we are trying to talk about something that's not even within our context of the world, and try to get a little bit like out there with consciousness or morality or a lot of other things, it can be like, okay, well, we can only communicate it as far as, damn, our language allows it and what our experiences are. Like, we'll never be able to communicate what true ultraviolet view might look like from a lobster's view. We might have an example of it, but we don't know truly what that would actually feel like in a conscious way.
Right. So. Yeah, I like that you brought that up, because I kind of looked it up here online here, but Aldous Huxley had like this, I'm going to do a horrible job at quoting it here, but basically he said that our brains have filters, and you know, when you take certain substances, in his case psychedelic substances, they basically either turn off certain knobs and they amplify some other ones, and you start seeing things, in a sense, how he says it, mind at large. So like you mentioned, I think for the same reason, just because we can't see things, just because we can't feel things, doesn't mean that they're not there, or those realities are non-existent.
And there's a question, are those more real or less real? And, you know, that's a real hard one to say. So if you, you know, start visually seeing different colors and shapes moving when you're on psychedelics, is that more real or less real? Like, it's, well, I'm not sure. It's different. It's definitely different, but that's one of those questions where it's like,
yeah, I have no clue. Right now that you guys mentioned dreams, like, I've always found it weird. I try to find, like, I guess, better literature on it. But I guess I just haven't used the right keywords to find what I'm looking for. But but what I've questioned before is, like, you know, when you are in a dream, I've had the last time I had this lucid dream, it was some very random one. I was watching too much. There's this video game called Last of Us. They have, like, zombies and stuff. Mm. I was playing it too much. I had a dream about it. And in my dream, I woke up and I was getting, like, attacked by one. And I was like, oh, damn, this is not real. And I just kind of let it happen, you know, and I woke up.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, like, the feelings, the sensations that you feel when you're in those dreams, especially when things that you know haven't happened to you. Like, there's this one time that I got shot in my dream for some reason. Mm-hmm. Shot right in the stomach. And obviously I've never been shot in my life, but the pressure, like the sudden, like, from heat to sudden cold, the blood dripping, it felt so real. And I just felt myself, mm-hmm, like, fading out of consciousness in that dream state. So to me, it's like, It's just a weird conversation to have, because nobody really knows how to explain it, you know? But it's interesting that you can feel those sensations when you've never had that experience.
Yeah, for sure. That's an intense dream. Holy damn.
And I think it's a struggle sometimes with language, yeah, right? It's sometimes a bit of a struggle with language, because we can only, again, it's to, if we describe certain things and even talk about certain things as much as we can communicate them, you might wake up and feel, you know, something really strange. Like you said, you know, you might wake up from a dream or something where something was happening, say, to your family, something negative, and you wake up and then, you know, you feel really negative. You feel sad and you kind of like, oh, I'm so grateful that actually they're still alive and, you know, it's just a dream. And, yeah, you know, your body feels like it happened for real, right? Now, you can kind of explain it a little bit and you can get scientifically down on the, you know, why you actually feel that way and how, you know, your brain triggers all of these emotions and that actually goes across through your body. But, you know, things like that, and, you know, getting deeper into, you know, things that we're talking about, like consciousness and, you know, reality, and that we're held to the context of what we know on language. Like, that's as far as we can describe it. You know, there's particular emotions or feelings that we can only really feel. That's sort of our body's feeling of what we perceive. But, like, we're talking about, how do you really go on explaining the color, say, blue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you can say it's blue. You can say scientifically the right, like, you know, you can say the RGB code for it. You can also scientifically say, you know, that's a type of photons hitting the particular structure or the surface, and this is the color that it creates. But all of that is created by humans, right? That is just a determination that humans have done to this particular thing. You know, if there was another race, aliens came through, they've just set up their base of blue actually is green to them. That's just the name, the terminology, what it comes through. It's not that we're wrong. It's not that they're wrong. No one really has the right thing. It's just right to your particular context in the world that you see and the structures that you've built around them.
Damn, no, that's interesting, man. I was just like, damn, my mind was blown right now when you were seeing all that. No, but I think it's interesting, again, because that, I guess, those thoughts are why we are afraid of the idea of death. A lot of us are afraid of the idea of death because we don't know what's out there. We don't know what happens after that person leaves. They don't come back. They don't communicate. So it's scary for a lot of people to think, like, oh shit, they don't exist here anymore. They're no longer existing in this reality. But doesn't mean that they, I mean, at least for me, my personal thing, I do believe that there's some sort of afterlife, that there's some sort of,
yep,
you know, spiritual journey that you go on. But again, just because it's not happening with us doesn't mean that it's not true. But again, hard to say because no, at least so far, none of us have come back to tell someone else, like, yo, man.
Yeah, no. But, and, like, we're talking about this in particular because, like, say for myself, I don't particularly believe in an afterlife. Now, whether you do or you don't, mm-hmm, one of the things about fear is usually fear is driven by an unknown, right? So generally, right, people are fearful when you don't know of something. So, you know, you'll have this anticipatory feel like, oh man, I'm like, what's going to happen? Is it going to be painful? Is something going to occur? A lot of the time when you do believe after the afterlife, and that can be from, you know, whichever religion, whatever belief you might hold, some people, and when you really believe into that, it actually reduces a little bit of the fear of dying because you have more assurance that you believe something is going to happen, mm-hmm, i.e. that you know into your own mind, this is what's going to happen at death. okay, I can be okay with that. I can move on. So that can be a way to sort of reduce fear, but you can still be fearful of death for many other reasons, i.e., you know, you still have regrets because you didn't get to do certain things you wanted to do, or if you die too early or whatever else. I don't know if you've got a particular view on this one.
A little bit. I think the interesting thing with death is, you know, let's do a little thought experiment. Imagine if instead of dying, which is, you pretty much always imagine it in a negative way, right? Like you'll get run over by a bus, you'll get, you know, hurt, injured, cancer, whatever. Like it's always sort of preceded by something that we know is very negative and we don't like, which is pain. Like there's very, very few people who have a death, which is, you know, full of bliss and sweet and happiness and like it's better for all. I was just imagining, like, imagine if instead of when you die, it was like preceded by a painful thing, if it was preceded by something really joyful, like just this huge outburst of like emotions and joy and happiness. You meet someone on their dying bed and they're always like the happiest. They're always in the best condition. How would we view death then? Would it be viewed as something negative, which it largely is now, or would it be viewed as, you know, oh, that's a positive thing. Oh, I'm looking forward towards the end of my life because I'm going to be able to experience, you know, that joy, that happiness. So that's like a, you know, it's just interesting that if you change that one little thing around, would the whole concept of death be that much different?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like, one of the biggest things, so if I'm myself, I think I had a lot of fear with death, not so much in the what happens next, not in the, oh, you know, it's just going to come a time where nothing's going to happen and my brain's going to shut down or whatever. It was really related to, man, if I die when I'm 50, am I not going to get to do all the things that I wanted to do? Am I going to have all these regrets? And there's two big things I think I changed. One was, well, if I'm prioritizing and setting out goals and understanding what I can do and trying to do them, obviously, in priority and as quickly as possible, then, okay, I'm going to start doing and prioritizing the things that I care about. So, you know, if I die in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, I focus on the things that I cared about. So I kind of alleviate that in one sense. But in the other sense, and I'm going to butcher this, but it was a particular quote I was reading from a recent book I was reading. And it sort of talked about, you know, aside from those who die young, the privilege that we have is to be able to grow old. So it was that sort of spin on it where don't so much just focus on, you know, death, be privileged in the fact that you are allowed to grow old, you know, be blessed in the fact that you can actually grow old and you haven't just died young, as, you know, many, many people have actually done. I think we were talking about the whole, like, the big 27 years old, which a lot of famous people have sort of died at that. And you're like, oh, you know, we almost like celebrated, like, oh man, we got to 28 years old. The whole, you know, the big fact is, sure, we all like are really scared that, you know, we're going to die one day, but hell, we could all die like at any point, at any day. It's like actually amazing that we are alive, able to do a lot of things, you know, to the actual minutiae of, you know, today I was talking to a workmate about running and it's something that I'm getting a little bit into. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I want to be doing this type of running. I'm not totally good, but I can kind of do that. And just him sort of responding like, oh, you know, I actually can't run because he's got a condition with his foot and whatnot and his hip. Yeah. And, you know, you can't do that. And you kind of go like, man, what am I even complaining about that I'm like going to have to go for a run? Like, at least I can go for a run. It kind of applies if you go all the way out macro, right, of death. You can put a lot of energy into preoccupying yourself on, dang, I'm going to die. Or similarly, put all that energy and be like, God damn, I'm alive. Let's put in energy into that. So when the time comes, hell, the way I view it, you know, when the time death comes, and it could be whenever, 10, 20, 30 years plus, whatever, I want to look back and be really comforted in the fact that, you know, I can look back and be like, man, I gave just like so much energy to all the stuff I cared about that it is fine. Like, it is time for me to just like be like content on what I've done.
Yeah. You're ready to go. Mm. Yeah. I mean, hopefully, I mean, that's hopefully what everybody seeks, you know, towards the end. Cause for sure you don't want, I mean, it happens every day, you know, some random event and boom, everything about that person is gone, you know? But who knows? That's why it's really, I always find, like, I mentioned to Kyron before we had this whole conversation, like, for the last couple of weeks, I had this anxiety about death for some reason. Like, for a good while, I haven't had that anxiety because, you know, I feel like I read enough and I'm open-minded enough to kind of take things in and analyze them and, you know, just be more open and understanding with myself about everything that is natural around us. But for some reason or another, I was just like, oh man, like death, like, oh man, like I started feeling like this compression in my chest, fearing like having to call my parents or like my girlfriend. I'm like, or anybody, I'm like, hey, you okay? You're doing fine. Like blah, blah, blah. Just cause I felt like if I didn't reach out to them and something happened, it wasn't enough for me to like just reach out to them last minute and, you know, to start wishing the best on them. But it was just a very weird feeling. And I felt like for at least a while, I was okay with the whole idea of, you know, passing and the whole process and all that stuff. But it kind of just snuck up on me. And next thing you know, I'm just like scrambling to figure out like, why am I feeling so anxious and stuff? So.
Yeah. And that's not a great feeling. Like anxiousness is probably like one of the worst feelings you can have that, like, it's almost like an inner energy. It's too much and you can't release it and get rid of it. And it can be caused by any numerous number of things, and that it never is like conquered, right? It's always, there's always something that could make you anxious, whether you think about it or not. And whether you prepare for it or not, it can still just come and get you. So it's like, you know, part of life and part of the, the progress of life that you have to deal with those things.
But yeah, and I was just going to say, we're saying about part of life, right? The part of life is death. Like it is an inevitable, unless there's someone out there that creates, like you can just live eternally and whatnot. And even then I'd probably be like, do I even want to do that? But you know, it's an inevitable part of life. And you know, sometimes as mere mortals, you know, we just can't come to grips with that for whatever reason, just for the same way that we can't come to grips, you know, you're never going to be the top of the world of a particular thing. You're never going to be the best at something else because you're not putting in enough effort or whatever else. Just one of these things that, you know, every human goes through it at whatever level, especially with death. It's just one thing. I think the more you also talk about it with people, the more you're really open about it with a lot of individuals. You can get really extreme and just openly talk about, you know, how you would want to, act when someone actually dies. I've thought about this a lot, actually, you know, when, you know, death, one of the biggest things that they say is obviously you go through your grieving process, but one of the best things obviously when someone has died is to really, really pivot and not reflect on, you know, how terrible it is that they've left you, but, you know, be really happy in the fact that you were able to spend X amount of time with them and you had such a joyous moment to actually go, you know, whether it's sort of your mum and going, you know, I'm really happy that I was able to have 40 years where I was able to do this and she was able to bring joy to the world. And, you know, it is inevitable. We're all going to die. That's a given. So, you know, to be dreading and to be so sad about it for a long time or be anxious about it while a human thing, if you try to go on the abstract and go, well, logically, you know, there's nothing really that we can do about it. So sure, think about it, but try and move on and go towards that positive outlook. Yeah. Way easier said than done though, because we all, and this I hate this from podcasts. I was listening to this, I'm talking about with Karen. I hate like podcasts and some people that talk about this in like the most theoretical way possible. And it's like, oh, it sounds all rosy. It's hard. Like it is hard to do practically. Yeah. Like we all go through all struggles. Like I might be saying that I never, like you don't really worry about death really, but there's always going to be days where you go, oh man, this is actually terrible. Like I'm really anxious. I really feel horrible about this. Yeah. And I think it's having those little trigger points, whether it's like, you know, do you have lists that help you out? Do you have reflection point? Do you have principles? You know, are you really refining your goals and things to go, these are my priorities, these are the things that go, okay, I realize why this is important, why I shouldn't care about it. You know, if your why is strong enough, it doesn't matter about the how. So a lot of these different ways where you can kind of reflect it back. So I'd say to people, you know, I'm not saying to you that you should always be perfect, because you're not going to be, we're all just mortals. But have ways that you can reflect back on your life and things that can trigger those positive emotions to go, okay, cool. You know, I know I'm having a terrible time. What can I do right now to kind of get me back a little bit on track? Whether that's through negative visualization, you know, positive music, training, whatever. There's all these different ways and actions that you can take to kind of actively go, okay, let me refine myself and get back to a positive mode.
No, it's definitely true. Cause I mean, if you're not, nobody else is going to do it for you, you know, ultimately it's really up to you to first start changing within yourself and, you know, in the hopes that hopefully that radiates to your external environment and so on and so forth.
Certainly.
A quick question. I had a little, I think it was you, Karen, and one of those little, I forgot which episode it was, if it was one of the shorter ones, but you brought up this example. I don't know if it was your example, but it was about a coin, like you know, like life being one side of the coin.
I was going to bring this up just before as well, because when you were talking about it, because I like these, the fragile, anti-fragile concept and life and death in the coin.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this was something. So, if you haven't heard of the term anti-fragile, it's from a book by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And it's basically like the whole concept is, what's the opposite of fragile? And so you'd sort of normally say things like robust, strong, blah, blah, blah. But that's not really it, because when you think about it, fragile is something that, like, if you apply stress to it, it breaks. But strong or robust, if you apply stress to it, it just, like, it doesn't make it better. It sort of just bounces off it. So something that's anti-fragile would be something that's, you apply stress to it and it makes it better, such as going to the gym and doing, like, you know, doing some weights. It breaks down the muscle, but it makes it better. Mm-hmm. Or you take like a little bit of poison and it gives you a little bit of immunity to it, a vaccination, for example. So yeah, my thoughts were on that were, I was sort of just, yeah, musing that, okay, what if death is actually just something that's, you know, completely, we're viewing it the wrong way. So we're sort of viewing it as like a one versus zero sort of thing. So you're alive and then you're death. Mm-hmm. And it's completely, it's like the opposite of being alive, right? But what if it's actually just a transition state? Or what if it's, you know, it's sort of just trying to, I guess, put the point that, and many other people have done this, is that, you know, the transition from being alive to being dead as we see it might not just be as simple as one and zero as we think it is. Maybe it's more like, you know, a reincarnation thing, so it just keeps on going on and on, or you go through a state of nothingness and then you're in something else. So I guess it's like just trying to psychologically, it's not saying what happens or is going to happen after it. It's more of a psychological thing for you to be like, okay, there does seem to be this very apparent one versus zero boundary point, you know, being alive and being dead. But what if it's actually just, you know, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it just keeps going in like different ways.
Yeah.
That was my, my musings, I guess, on that point.
Yeah. I think it's a, you know, different cultures have different ways of approaching the concept of death. You know, for a lot of people here in the United States, you know, I don't really see it as in a sense, a celebration of the life. It's more of a, you know, understandably, it's about mourning and, you know, just trying to visualize this person as how they were instead of what they did and how they valued, you know, that specific individual. And obviously other cultures, they take the process, you know, ancient cultures, they used to take time to, you know, the body to guide the spirit, you know, through rituals or a song, you know, so on and so forth. They'll spend days if they needed to, just, you know, to make that move from conscious being to death into wherever afterlife it was. And I used to feel like, at least here, it feels like there's a lot of disconnect in that now, you know, and it's unfortunate, because I feel like a lot of us will benefit from being able to fully grasp the ideas of the celebration of somebody's life and the celebration of being to the next phase of our journey, you know? But I don't know. It's either way, you know, the fact that we're having these conversations, that you guys, you know, miles away are having these conversations with people around you. You know, I think at some point it's going to be that breaking point where there's a new conscious, I don't know, evolution, I will hope, or revolution in terms of ways of thinking, you know, to move past whatever bias we have.
Well, yeah, it kind of makes me think of this concept, right? There was, I was listening to this where, you know, imagine you bring someone from the 1750s to today's world, right? They would quite likely almost die of shock of how many things have changed. So that's 250 years back. But if that individual from the 1750s was to pull someone back from 250 years before that, the 1500s, it actually wouldn't be that much of a shock. You'd actually have to go all the way back to like 1000, you know, the year 1000. And then if that dude from the year 1000 wanted to like really surprise someone, you'd have to go like all the way back, like 20,000 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the experiences that, you know, we're seeing now is, imagine it's the year 2000 and you start telling people like, oh, by the way, you're going to have self-driving cars and, you know, Elon's going to be throwing this rocket up into space through SpaceX and all these other crazy stuff like, you know, the FANGs, Facebook, Airbnb, your Netflix, they're going to be the biggest companies in the world worth $9.7 trillion. And you know, you'd be like, no, that just sounds ridiculous, right? So it's speeding up in the way, like, you know, technology, how we're just you know, evolving as human beings. You know, I was talking to someone about, you know, their 3 to 4 year old kid already being able to develop and understand things that as like 20-year-olds, we're just like, what is going on? This is just changing so, so rapidly. Yeah. And whether it's that, I mean, you can call it, I guess, as conscious beings, you know, I could see in another 20 years time, you know, the humans that we're sort of creating in an environment that they're in, consciousness is just going to become so different, because to them, it's already native to be communicating like through an online platform, through be, you know, very digitally native. But what's the next step that evolves through that? Imagine to the point where maybe we've got AI, VR to such an extreme that you almost can have two worlds, two lives, right? You can have the real world and you can be living in your sort of virtual reality world, and it can be so native to them that it's kind of like, oh yeah, there's just two realities, right? So, you know, obviously that's getting a little bit futuristic, but it's not out of the question that that could happen in the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And consciousness, as we know, it starts just completely shifting to the point where you could be like, you know, what is considered consciousness if you're able to detach what you believe is your being into a computer being that gets passed down to a machine that then can go and keep on living your life? Like, is that me? Is that still Juan living in a little machine roaming around for 500 years?
Yeah.
If you pass all my consciousness, and I think that gets down deep into the, okay, at that point, we're going to have to make a decision. Is it really the same one, or have you sort of evolved? Is it, are we artificially created that sort of coin view where it's life, death, robot, right? Where you can actually put forth the effort into being like, okay, well, that's your next stage. That's a 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. You want to be whatever you want. This is what we can term as consciousness. Go forth. And I think at that point, there's going to be some really pointy discussions and things that happen to go, do we even want to do that? And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to say yes, but there's probably a lot of people who are going to say, no, that's not me anymore. That's consciously, that's probably not me anymore. I don't want to do that. And just, you know, I can imagine now 100 years in the future where regardless of where humanity goes, you're going to have people who are going to be growing up into an age where that's not just like a interesting, wacky idea. It's just a decision that's available in life. You kind of just go, okay, well, you know, you want to be smart, just insert this chip and you can go do that. You want to be amazing at sport, just go do that. And then consciousness just becomes whatever we want it to be, which would become really interesting. Imagine having to quantify and code consciousness. That would be an interesting concept indeed. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you guys have heard of that Elon Musk, what is it called? The Neuralink? Like that, I mean, that's just like the beta phase of what's coming, you know? Like at some point, I'm sure, I think, what is it supposed to be like? Some HUD, right? Like you get in like a heads-up display type of thing. I think you get notifications, or I think at some point you're trying to communicate with other people through it or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and I was
talking about it using Bluetooth, I think. So, like, that's how you'd sort of connect to it. So,
and I think they're going to Bluetooth, release,
you could then...
And he's releasing, very shortly, like, sort of the next news about it. But, man, yeah, I've been into sort of artificial intelligence for quite a few years now. So, I used to lead the APAC region for AI in a particular consulting practice.
Nice.
And yeah, the stuff that I saw, you know, across banking sectors, health sectors, you know, what we see and what's still coming out, like I recently saw the latest innovation from, I think it was OpenAI, which Elon Musk sort of funds, I believe, where some of the AI there is already creating whole texts, right? Like a whole paragraph based on what it believes you would write like. And you can't even tell the difference between this thing that's been written by this AI and your writing. Like, it's just no difference. Sure, little one or two words, but it's getting to the point where, you know, we're talking deep, like we got into this topic and it's like, you know, what if you pair that with deep fakes and all of a sudden you can create like almost infinite amount of media content of like, you know, Vladimir Putin talking whatever you wanted to say and just go on and tour infinity on a particular topic, pump it out to all the news areas, we're going to get to the point of like, okay, well, what's real or not?
Exactly. Right?
Like, you know, this is being created and generated and sure, we kind of know it's fake, but then what are we going to get to a point that it's like, well, how do we know if it's real anymore? Like it just looks exactly like it is.
Really, yes, like some really good Photoshop. Yeah, I mean, there's already an app. What things called like Reface or something. And like, it's already in the hands of, I mean, it's very immature video. You can put your face on anybody and it moves and expresses itself, but it's obviously a really amateur version that's available to the public right now. You know, somebody who has the skills can obviously make a real crazy deep fake of us three right here, you know, in some movie or something. But
oh yeah, definitely. I was showing Karen some of these videos, you know, just as on TikTok, there's this massive trend at the moment where you get like this particular song and they're just getting like people's heads to do this dance right through the music, and they're getting like Vladimir Putin, they're getting Michael Jackson's face, like all these different people. And it looks, obviously you can see that it's been altered, mm-hmm. but you know, they're moving their mouths and moving their eyes in the same direction. And that stuff's moving like very, very quick. So it always brings me back, and it just makes me think, you know, 50 years from now, kids who are being brought up, you know, I think if we got teleported to 50 years in the future, we're going to be just so all the way back to consciousness, right? We're not even going to understand what's going on in some of the decisions, in some of the availabilities, that we're only going to be understanding like, well, but this is life as we know it. Like there's a light here and a laptop there. And humans then will be like, oh, well, yeah, but we're using our Neuralink and this. And all of a sudden, yeah, there's a laptop here, but you know, there's a heads-up display Surface tablet here, and there's a light here, but I can actually shift it here with my hand. And all of a sudden you go, okay, well, that's their consciousness, which is nothing like what it is to you and me now today, purely through the advances of technology, but how they've just been raised into that's just the common world. That is what it is.
Mm. The concept of reality is definitely like changing a lot. So, you know, imagine the first time someone ever dreamt, that would have been a very radical experience. The first time someone ever took a psychedelic drug, first time anyone ever, I don't know if you've actually used a VR before, Eddie, but it is a surreal experience going into it. You can see it's still, you know, not
rudimentary, not the best,
right.
But it's still like, oh, whoa, this is something very different.
Yeah, it's enough to like immerse you in it to a point, you know?
Exactly. It's almost like, you know, if you want to think about it this way, you almost need to train yourself to be able to live in different realities. So you might need to start, you know, using VR as a form of like just getting used to what's going to come, mm-hmm. because whatever's going to come is going to be completely different than, you know.
Well, think about it. Like, you know, I'm going to paint a picture for people, right? So, you know, we think about the movie The Matrix, right? You're laying back, you're jacked into your brain, like all this stuff. But you could almost kind of get that feeling by, you could lay on this machine, have a full haptic suit, right? A full suit which can sort of stimulate all parts of your body. You can full have virtual reality set up on sort of the headset so you experience it. And you almost don't even need to move a muscle, right? You can just kind of think of the changes, the nerves are going through the haptic suit, and you get to feel all these things as if you're just experiencing the world. So the Matrix, you know, idea isn't even that far now with the current technology that we have. And it is just at its very base rudimentary levels. Like VR, I was listening to some stuff from Tim and a couple of people from Silicon Valley, right? It's still 20 years away from its proper commercial use. Mm-hmm. Once it gets into the hands of the broad community, that's what I'm talking about. 20 years is maybe when it's going to go commercial. So double that, let's go 40 years when it's going to become commonplace for kids to just pick up and learn. Like imagine you as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, just knowing that, oh, for me to go to school, I just put my headset on and then I'm at school and then I walk around school, right? So that's their reality. So their reality is actually going through two planes, right? The normal human plane and the virtual reality plane. And that's consciousness to them. We've sort of almost gone into like, not explicitly, but you've almost gone to another dimension, right? You've got the three dimensions that you live in. You've got the fourth dimension of time, but then you've got an extra dimension where essentially just this other world where, hell, you can go back in time, forward in time, anywhere you want, sort of at will. And, you know, yeah, the possibilities at that point, like we can talk about it for many, many hours. We just don't know what will happen, which both interests me, like it makes it like really, really interesting, but it also then brings it all the way back to when we talk about consciousness, when we talk about reality, when we talk about death, it's contextual to a time frame and contextual to what we know now. And you can't really go beyond those boundaries. To go beyond those boundaries is fun, like we've been talking about, but it isn't also realistic, nor can you get something really valuable to go, oh, well, that's what's going to happen. Like, you don't know. And you're really going to get the truth probably in the context that you can actively act on.
Damn. Well, man.
Blow my mind on.
I know. I'm like, damn. Well, I mean, we're at that time, guys. I mean, before we end this all here, I have one quick question. If both of you guys had the opportunity to go from mere mortals to immortals and insert yourself into this robot machine to see what the future is going to be like, will you do it?
Yeah, I'm probably keen as long as there's like a back button. Like I'd want to be able to go back or at least like know about it, right? I don't think it'd be as fun if imagine we were in it right now, but I just didn't know it. I think it'd be much more fun if like right now I knew, okay, I could go back to whatever land it was that I was in before this.
Mm.
So yes, I would try it, but I'd want that stipulation.
I'll go a different route. I'll say yes, because as someone who wants to like know more and learn more, definitely I'd want to go and know what it is to be like this full level, but I wouldn't want a back button. And the reason why is if you had a back button, you would go back to your previous state and then you will forever know what that future state would be like to be immortal, to be all these huge things, to be whatever. And you would not have a way to cope with it, I believe. Like to me, the way I concept, you can go, yeah, well, you're not even a mere mortal. But yeah, I couldn't cope with that to know, like, it's kind of like the picture of, you know, if you really like running and someone went, you were Usain Bolt now for a year. And I'm like, oh, frig, this is amazing. And then after a year, they took it away. You know, you'll never reach that ever again. Like ever, no matter what you try. And I feel you'd be really dejected about that. So if I'm going to do it, it's going to be a one-way ticket. If then, not, I'll just stick around and be like, nah, then I enjoy just the progress of learning and pursuing it through.
Yeah, Juan doesn't half-ass things.
I never half-ass things, man. There is no half-assing, Eddie. It's just, it is 100% for me or not at all.
How about you, Eddie? What would you do?
Man, I think I'll probably go your route, Kyron. I don't know. Safe once I...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure at some point I'll be like, I mean, I guess y'all get used to it, but I'll be like, dude, I need my legs or my arms or something, you know? But I mean, I guess already being a robot or whatever it is, you can upgrade, you can do whatever you want. So, you know what? I don't know. I think I'll go with Juan. Sorry, Kyron.
Good.
I can upgrade.
The right choice.
Well, thank you guys again for coming out. I really do appreciate the time. And I hope that this is not the last time we, you know, sit down, have a conversation. I honestly was my mind was blown a few times here, and I hope the listeners feel the same way and that they check you guys out.
For sure.
Brilliant, Eddie.
My pleasure.
Yeah, no, definitely, Eddie. Thanks so much, mate, from Australia, from the land down under. No, thanks for the time.
If people want to find you guys, where can they hear the podcast? Where can they catch your videos?
Yeah, so if you look on, just type Mere Mortals podcast into Google, that'll get you to basically all of the links. But we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube and on Facebook. That's the main areas. If you listen to podcasts, we're on whatever
platform all of them, yeah, essentially. But yeah, generally, if you want to just listen to us, all the podcast networks. But if you, as you were saying, Eddie, if you want to see some of our clips and a couple of new things coming out, Instagram's going to be the place. Say Mere Mortals Media. Say Mere_Mortals_Media. And on YouTube, it'll be Mere Mortals there as well.
Yeah, so. Probably awesome. 80% of our efforts onto Instagram. So if you want to connect and get the, I guess, like most polished experience of us, that's the place to go.
Awesome. Well, Juan, Kyron, thank you again one more time. I'm going to make sure to get your guys' one of your addresses. I'm going to send you some stickers all the way from LA here. So.
Oh, awesome. That'd be awesome.
Thank you guys. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'm going to go to sleep in a few hours. You guys take care.
Nice. All right. Cheers. All right, thanks a lot, Eddie. Thank you.
You see them calling on the scene. They'd rather shoot you on the street. They wanna tell you, raise your hands. And if I tell them that I am, I still get choked till I can't breathe. You see them calling on the scene. They'd rather shoot you on the street. Yeah, every time you take a stand, they wanna kill you where you stand. And they get mad you take a knee. Hey, fuck the peace, where my peace at? Hey, fuck a speech with a beat set. Gotta call Vince so I can talk my shit again. Cause even if I don't hit again, I'm still gonna be the man on the road like a Michelin. It's all good. Fuck 12 and I hope you hear it in all hoods. I hope you never get a day off. In fact, I hope you get laid off. Tryna sweep shit under the rug like you paid off. I hope your daughter bumped this shit so you could listen to it. You'd rather shoot cause you can't fight, yeah, that's how bitches do it. I told you once that I don't like you, so just keep it moving. You wouldn't like what I have to say cause this a Black Lives Movement. Fuck a Trump, fuck a Karen, fuck a big white truck with big wheels. Bitch, your flag is stupid. Smart dick energy, we know it's there. And your president got one too, that's how you know he's scared. Pussy. You see them calling on the scene. Yeah.
tell me how we supposed to get it popping in good conscience if we can't see the world through some new optics. The streets talking and they want change. I look around and all I see is pain. Ain't it a shame these ain't new things? Got people in the White House and media, they preaching for peace, while my homies still got their people hanging from trees. I got knees on their neck screaming they couldn't breathe, but expect us to respect the lives of crooked police. But fuck that, we bust back till justice is served. They never listen when the people try using their words. They play the victim when they get caught slipping and claim we tripping off a system that was built to put these white folks first. But look, we gotta move it forward until we find the answers and tear down institutions while we building up a ladder. So keep fighting and keep praying. You know that we ain't stopping until everybody's saying.
You see them calling on the matter. Scene. They'd rather shoot you on the street.
They'd rather gun you down.
They wanna tell you raise your hands, and if I tell them that I am, I still get choked till I can't breathe.
Fuck some bullshit.
Yeah. You see them calling on the scene.
You see them calling on the scene.
They'd rather shoot you on the street.
They'd rather shoot me on the street.
Yeah, every time you take a stand, they wanna kill you where you stand, and they get mad you take a knee. Hey, fuck the peace, where my peace at?